Welcome to the ADAA podcast about anxiety as a mind game. Today we're talking with Dr. Reed Wilson of the Anxiety Disorders Treatment Center in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Dr. Wilson, let me ask you the first question. What is the principle behind treating anxiety disorders as a mind game?
Well, of course, anxiety disorders aren't truly a mind game because they're pretty serious and can be very long-lasting disorder, but it's really the very best way for people to begin to figure out how to make things better in their life. Anxiety works in such a way that the way it lives in your life is that if you respond appropriately. So let's say somebody with panic disorder, panic is going to throw you a sensation of physical arousal and what we would call thoughts of impending doom, and how you respond determines whether or not it wins. So you must resist. Everything in the anxiety disorders has to do with resistance. And if we can learn that protocol, if you learn how your challenger operates, you can then best figure out how to respond to it. So the way I work with people is to, number one, create that kind of sense of this as a mind game, and look at what I would have to do opposite in order to make these changes come. If I can move over to a behavioral therapy term, we talk about habituation. So to develop an ability to tolerate an experience in such a way that you can approach it without intense anxiety. Habituation takes three things: frequency, intensity, duration. You've got to practice often enough, you've got to have strong enough anxiety when you practice, and then it needs to last long enough. Yeah, lots of the clients that we work with, most of them, when they go to do a behavioral practice, they will do it, but they will do it with resistance. I don't want to do this, but I will. And that little change, that's the resistance that I think causes the anxiety disorder to persist. So a lot of what I do with people is to help them imagine in this game that the stance I want to take, my attitude, is I am seeking out being uncomfortable. I want my anxiety to last. I want it to be strong. Because with habituation, it has to last. It has to be strong. It has to show up. Well, if I want the outcome of this treatment, then I also want the treatment. And when I want the treatment in the moment, in that game, moment by moment, if I seek out what it is that I've been resisting, we begin to change the whole nature of the game. So that's, in essence, what we're doing with it. Obviously, there's lots of fine points to it.
So when you talk about maladaptive responses, is that resistance on the part of a patient?
Sure. We talk about catastrophic responses. I'm afraid something horrible is going to happen. And then resisting, avoiding, backing away. In this particular game, we think about you're giving up territory. Here we got all this mental territory, brain territory, that I'm backing up and surrendering to the anxiety disorder. If you think of, obsessive compulsive disorder, as long as I do my rituals and respond in the way you ask me to respond, you'll leave me alone. And so what we then want to do, opposite that, is be aggressive, be offensive. If you really pay attention to what people do of anxiety disorders, 100% of their activity is in being defensive, protecting myself. And you cannot win a game if all you do is act defensively. It'd be like me teaching you how to play basketball and saying, look, every time I get the ball, your job is to drop your hands and stand still until you hear the whoosh of the ball through the basket, and then you can move again. Or I'll teach you how to play cards, and every time you draw a card out of the deck that matches either the suit or the number of a card in your hand, you should discard that. So people are confused because the challenger, anxiety, has taught them the rules that guarantees it will win. So the maladaptive is primarily backing away, resisting, defending, and you have to move offensively. And the toughest part about moving offensively is that the next step is always into darkness. You do not know what's happening next. And that is uncertainty. And as we know, people with anxiety disorders cannot tolerate uncertainty. So we have to have them understand that I'm going to seek out distress, and I'm going to seek out uncertainty as my key out of my suffering.
So as a therapist, how do you take the first step with a patient to get them to step into the uncertainty?
Well, I talk about it as persuasive therapy. I really do have to work their last nerve around this concept. I am relatively simplistic in what I talk about, and the game is the way to do it. We don't talk a lot about behavioral treatment. I am really a cognitive therapist, and so as a cognitive therapist, we pay attention to belief systems. And my job, obviously I'm going to do behavioral practice with people, but the behavioral practice is always going to be in service of modifying a belief system. So anything that I would teach to therapists, I will teach and say to my clients. And very simply, this is a game. I'm going to help you learn to go forward. Let's just do a small little experiment. That's what we'll do, too. We'll break things down very small. We'll do a brief little breathing exercise, some of the work that David Barlow and Michelle Krask and David Clark have done around interoceptive exposure. Let's just take three deep breaths and exhale quickly and get a little hyperventilating sensations up. Any little exposures and to begin to see what it's like to take it and ask for more of it, seek out more of it. So that's the way I will begin. Absolutely, I want to have them understand the nature of the problem, and I'm going to outline for them the model of treatment before session one is over, and then we'll start looking at behavioral practices.
So is the goal to help patients gain control when they indulge in their obsessive compulsive behavior? They feel they're getting control, and this is flipping it on its head a little bit. Is control something that patients are looking for? Is that part of
absolutely.
The therapy?
Absolutely. All this, control is very much like certainty. I want control of my body. I don't want my heart rate to increase. I don't want to feel lightheaded. I don't want to feel distressed. I don't want to not know how something's going to turn out. Generalized anxiety disorder is very much like that. And so I'm going to gain control by giving up control in the old manner. For me to say to the anxiety to please increase. The other thing I do is I personify the anxiety disorder. I externalize it. So I will have them ask it to make sensations worse. And so as I begin to go toward the thing I'm afraid of, I discover that I have control. And part of the control comes as I drop away all these sacred cows that I thought were working. There's the old joke of the guy that's looking out his window and his neighbor's stomping around the house 10 times, and he comes out finally one morning and says, "Sorry, sir, I hate to bother you. Look like you're doing something important, but what are you doing stomping around the house 10 times every morning?" He says, "Well, I'm keeping the tigers away." He says, "Sir, there's no tigers in this neighborhood." And he says, "See?" Right? And so most of the people that we work with, although we think about OCD as people with rituals, almost everybody with anxiety does some form of ritualizing to protect themselves. And if we can strip away all those rituals, what we talk about sometimes as safety behaviors, mm-hmm. safety crutches is what I call them, and discover, just stand there rawly facing anxiety and discover that I can handle it. And that's self-efficacy. That's resilience. Whatever happens, I can handle it is the message we want them to have in the end.
So avoiding anxiety doesn't seem so bad. The idea is not to avoid it. It's to embrace it and step into a,
sure,
a new
realm. Yeah, and then
anxiety
is eventually going to shrivel away and jump into somebody's body who resists it. It's going to be there. It's just going to find somebody else to play with.
And in working with patients, is there a typical amount of time it takes for them to come around to stop resisting?
I don't think. Well, one of the things I noticed that is the severity of the disorder is not correlated with their potential change and their prognosis. You can have people who are pretty darn sick, but if they can catch on to the concepts, they can move very quickly. I've done a lot of brief therapy work where a lot of the people I see now, I see for a session and a half, and that's all I see them, and then I do email responses with them. And that will work for some people. I do an intensive weekend with 7 people for 13 hours over 2 days, and that has produced some very good change. If you can catch on, you know, if you can catch on to the principles and take the principles home, then you can use those principles in lots of different settings. If the principle is, you know, to go towards what you're afraid of and, you know, have three or four basic rules about how to operate, depending on what the disorder is, then whatever comes down the way, you can handle. So, you know, if somebody came in with a fear of flying, a little tough because it's hard to practice that. But I'm hoping they have some other phobia, because you can practice your fear of flying skills by working on fear of water, fear of elevators, because the generic skills are the same, but it's a little easier in those contexts, and then you can transfer them over to the plane.
So I think this is your statement, and I'd just like you to elaborate on it a little bit, as you've done somewhat. In training to win against anxiety, it is counterproductive to try to stay relaxed. It is best to seek out discomfort. So that goes along with stepping into the uncertainty. That's the kind of discomfort you're talking about.
Sure. And also, you know, if I'm going to go set up a practice for myself, go into the mall and go in the card shop and shop for a little bit, I might think that that's going to get me distressed, and so that's why I pick it. Now, if you go in there and it turns out that you're relaxed, if you find that you're comfortable, that's perfectly fine. But now you check that one off your list. What in that sentence, what you want to pay attention to is it's counterproductive to try to stay relaxed. If you discover you're relaxed, that's fine. But if you go into a situation feeling like it's important now for me to do my breathing skills, because my breathing skills always help me, as long as I can do my calming breath, I'll be fine. Now we've got a win-lose situation where if I do my breathing skills and they don't work, now I'm in trouble again. Oh, no. So when I try, if I have to relax in order to get better, I am in trouble. If I can go in, practice some relaxation skills in that they work and I calm down, great. If they don't work and I'm still anxious, that's fine too, because I can handle it. Now you don't get blackmailed by the possibility that you're in a situation that's just too darn threatening to you and you feel too anxious.
Okay, I see. Is there anything else you'd like to add about this, the mental game of playing against anxiety, or playing with anxiety, rather?
Yeah, that's right. It's not playing against
anxiety,
with anxiety. No, I think we covered it pretty nicely for a
very
brief
good
little talk.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Wilson. And this is Jean Tycho for ADAA.